Hi again, everybody. Welcome back. Tonight, another three-hour look at the terror attacks on America as we continue to bring you the news behind the news, important viewpoints and information from journalists and researchers both here and abroad who are anything but mainstream in their views. First up, we go live to England to hear from our good friend David Icke, whose research, whose books, and whose speaking engagements around the world have made him one of the most controversial men on the planet. David, of course, a longtime guest on this program over the years and has helped, without doubt, countless people learn to look behind the curtain. David, welcome back.
Hello, Jeff.
Thanks for getting up so early over there.
Yeah, not a problem.
Did this come as a surprise to you, David, in any way, shape, or form? Have been of the opinion for some time that, frankly, it was overdue. And if it did surprise you, how did it?
Didn't surprise me in the least. I've been led to believe for some years that there was a major event coming that would advance this agenda for global centralization of power that we've been discussing on this program for a long time now. Because although quite obviously, the world has been moving faster and faster towards this world government, world central bank, world army, centralized global decision-making scenario. I'm also aware that they have a specific timescale of introducing this global fascist state. There's no other way of describing it.
You have made that quite clear in the past, and we have talked that their timetable probably was being advanced. There were a lot of things happening which were pushing in that direction, and I think you're 100% right. And in this case, I would have to say the timetable is now very apparent.
Yeah, and the point that I was observing is that fast as the world was moving towards that, where we were and the timescale for where they want us to be in relation to this agenda, there was still a massive gap between the two. And I was being led to believe for some time, and it was kind of obvious just observing it, that some major event or events, because this is the first in a cycle, this is not it, were planned to advance that agenda almost overnight. And what happened in New York and Washington has moved this global centralization of power agenda forward so fast. When I first came to America to travel widely in 1966, that was the first time we met, of course, I was staggered at what a controlled society America was. If Americans came to Britain, they would see things that I don't see and the people in Britain don't see because we're too close to it. Although, you know, when you start researching this stuff, you start looking at everything in a totally different light. But the general population in Britain don't see things that people that come in would see. And when I came into America, I could not believe what a controlled society it was. Not quite as bad as Canada, but certainly getting that way. What we are not looking at in America, even before this, is the land of the free. Absolutely not. And after this, in the days and the weeks and the months ahead, America is going to become nothing less than a police state. And because of what I call the problem-reaction-solution, create the problem, get the reaction, then offer the solution scenarios that are played all the time, and this was a colossal one, we are going to see this massive, stunning advance of the Big Brother society without the American population, because of this event, complaining about it. They're going to say it was necessary. And that's what's been going on. And before we, you know, get into this, I just want to make this point. Challenging the American government is not attacking the American people. What we need to do is to see the difference between the American population, which I have enormous affection for, and those within the government. Not even the government, because most of the government, what we call the government, won't be aware of this. It's the force within the government that is that we need to focus on and challenge. By doing that, it's not an attack on America. It's an exposure of the force, not just within the American government, but within all significant global governments that are working to this same agenda. And we have a guy here in Britain, Tony Blair, who is massively, knowingly, fully aware of his involvement in this and where it's leading. Yep. And no one has yet, and I don't think ever will, convince me. Quite the opposite. I think the evidence is more and more going to come out to show this crystal clear, that George W. Bush, a pawn in himself, and Tony Blair certainly knew this was coming before it happened.
Maybe not the exact details, maybe not the exact time. And even, David, if they didn't know, they certainly are smart enough, these people who want to run the world, to grab this opportunity and run to the bank with it as fast as they can.
I think the thing is, though, Jeff, that the way these scenarios work, and I've been studying these, as many other people have too, and they take a completely predictable line, a predictable scenario every time. And there are many telltale signs, and one of them is that the moment one of these horrendous events happens, the person or people responsible for it are already being talked about. In this case, Bin Laden. For Bin Laden, read Lee Harvey Oswald.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I'm not saying for a second that Bin Laden is not a terrorist. Absolutely, he's admitted it himself. In fact, the CIA and the American intelligence services actually created him in many ways, and certainly created the terrorist network in Afghanistan fight the Russians during the Soviet Union Afghanistan war.
Sure.
But his name came up immediately, and you know, in terms of people knowing, when you're playing a problem reaction solution scenario, one of the most vital elements of it is pushing the solutions out there as soon as you can. And to have such a coordinated and immediate response from Blair, from Bush, and other people to what must happen as a result of this horrific disaster shows me without any doubt that they knew about it. And something else very interesting, I don't know whether this has come out in America. 1 week on September the 3rd, before this catastrophe, the biggest military deployment by the UK forces was sent to the Gulf on, quote, an exercise.
Oh, yeah.
So by the time the thing happened, the biggest force deployed by the UK since the Falklands War is in precisely the area of the world that was immediately blamed for this once it happened.
Yeah, those exercises are on schedule. They're going to be held, I think, in Egypt, by and large. Americans will be there. It's a so-called coalition exercise. You are 100% right. So
just a coincidence, nothing to worry about.
One of those amazing coincidences. Now, here's one. We're going to go to a break in a minute. I want to read something right after the break, which will underscore and capitalize everything you've said. And let us, before we go to the break, again, urge people who may be of a let's go nuke 'em mentality, get even, and all the rest of that, that neither David nor I nor most of our listening audience has anything but shared grief and mourning for the great suffering and tragedy that America has been put through. We hurt. But we are looking at this, as David said, as a governmental issue on the world stage, not as a human issue tonight. That's what we're going to try to do. All right, we'll be right back in just a couple of minutes with David Icke, live from England. And welcome back. Jeff Rentz with David Icke, live in England. David's book, Children of the Matrix, we'll tell you how to get that later, lays all of this out. David has been talking about this for years on this program and around the world, as I mentioned. His views on problem, reaction, solution are really legendary in the so-called alternative news media. You're not going to find this, folks, in the mainstream. It just doesn't happen. We are looking tonight at the tragedy which befell America a week ago. In terms of global politics, the geopolitical game underscored with, of course, big oil, big money, and big greed. There are already calls here in the United States. The mayor of Denver, Colorado, David, and the congresswoman from Colorado are asking the feds to come in and take over security operations for every airport in America. There are also calls now for national identity cards. People are looking over their shoulders of anyone who looks Far Eastern in appearance, and there had been two murders, two men shot to death, one Indian, one, I believe, a Pakistani, owners of gasoline stations, just a couple of days ago, as America continues to try to grapple with the pain and anguish of seeing such a mortal blow struck at the greatest symbol, perhaps, of world economic oppression, at least in terms of the views of some people. Now, here's the story, David. Tomorrow, in the New York Times, and this again is exactly, precisely what you have been saying for years. We're seeing it in print now. By William Gleiberson, New York Times, Wednesday, September 19th, New York. Security experts in the United States are describing a new kind of country that could emerge where electronic identification might become the norm, where immigrants might be tracked far more closely, and the airspace over cities like New York and Washington might be completely off limits to all civilian aircraft. Attorney General John Ashcroft outlined several proposals Monday, saying we should strengthen our laws to increase the ability of the Department of Justice and its component agencies to identify, prevent, and punish terrorism. The proposals Ashcroft described include measures that would give law enforcement officials expanded electronic surveillance powers and new powers to seize the assets of suspected terrorists. Now, think about that expression. Since the attacks, Congress has been acting on proposals to make wiretapping of computers far easier, and a flood of measures is expected that will loosen restrictions on what effectively is domestic spying. And finally, he says, legal experts say that the courts are unlikely to impose many, if any, restrictions on Congress's security decisions. So here we are, David, Americans begging for safety and willing to give up more.
Well, I mean, as you quite rightly say, we've been talking about this over the years on this program, and now it's in our face. And I just found something the other day that I wrote on the day that George W. Bush was inaugurated, January 20th, 2001. And I wrote this on my website the day he was inaugurated, that day would be remembered as a dark day for human freedom, the day that George W. Bush took the oath on the same Freemasonic Bible used by George Washington and became the 43rd President of the United States. He goes on to say, Powell, like the Bushes and Cheney, is bloodline, and that's why he is to be the new Secretary of State. Given that lineup and their mentality and agenda, don't be surprised at all if the United States finds itself in another manipulated war during this administration. You will see monsters being created in the public mind to justify such action. The Bush inauguration marks the start of the massive push by the Illuminati to further their agenda for a global fascist state. You will see this clearly unfolding in the next 24 months. Well, we're seeing it unfolding now in front of our eyes, and like I said right at the start, this has advanced the agenda we have been talking about and exposing all these years faster than anything else that's happened, certainly in recent times. This is just the start. The conflict will now be expanded so that more and more solutions and destructions of freedom can be put in place. This is not the last terrorism in America. And for me, and I've been led to believe this from contacts from many different sources of many different kinds over many years, For me, this is leading to some kind of conflict with China eventually. And if you look at the world map, if you start creating conflicts in the area around Afghanistan, mm-hmm. you're starting to get very dangerously close to the Chinese border.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. As each day goes by, I know you see it, I see it, more and more pieces of a very ugly but sadly familiar puzzle begin to be falling onto the table. We see news stories, little clippings. It's the news behind the news, as I mentioned at the top, that is so important in these stories. You've got to watch for the small stories that appear once, and then they're gone. And that's the way it works. That's the game.
I think one of the things that people should just take a deep breath and ask themselves, certainly this has been my experience watching the saturation coverage of this horrific event in Britain. We're now 8 days, 8-9 days after the tragedy,
mm-hmm.
and I am still, literally still waiting, despite that saturation coverage, to hear one piece of information on the mainstream broadcast media that has not come from an official source. And I'm being told that bin Laden is the chief suspect. And let's just look at this. Bin Laden was mentioned immediately after the event from official sources.
Mm-hmm.
And bin Laden has come from, it could be bin Laden. Bin Laden has this terrorist network. We think it could be bin Laden. And it has seamlessly evolved to, it was bin Laden. Now, that seamless evolvement to, it was him, surely must be motivated and generated by evidence. But it's not evidence that's taken us from we think it was bin Laden to everyone accepting that it was. It is merely the fact that that statement has been made so many times that it's now become an accepted truth.
Sure.
Like I said earlier, when you have a Kennedy assassination, when you have one of these events, if in a problem reaction solution scenario, you must introduce the patsy, the person that you're going to use to smokescreen who was really behind it, immediately, so that there's no dangerous speculation, because you're already focusing the public mind on who it was. And this is what's happened here. And bin Laden is a deeply, deeply disturbed individual. He's been responsible, I'm sure, for some horrific events. But we're not talking here about a parcel bomb. We're not talking here about some mind-controlled fanatic driving a truck full of explosives into a restaurant in Jerusalem. We're talking about a tremendously complex operation in which four commercial airliners were hijacked within, 15 minutes of each other and flown into highly specific targets. To say that was not done without massive involvement of forces within the United States is absolutely ludicrous for me.
I completely agree. We'll be right back. We'll take a little break. David Icke, live on the line from England. His book, Children of the Matrix, has it all. In between the covers, the whole story, it is a remarkable epic in American and world history as we continue to watch this as closely as we can for you, coast to coast and around the world. We'll be right back. The tragedy which befell our country a week ago is the amazing impact of television, that most awesome of weapons that has ever been unleashed on humankind. It can be used for good. It can be used for evil. It can be used to program hundreds of millions of people. In this case, television brought to the world at large a sense of shock, horror, and grief that David may not have been transmitted by any form of media with such urgency, such graphic, outrageous horror than this one. People around the world literally were shocked to tears by this. The coverage of it was incredible. There is a new link I'll be putting up on my homepage momentarily. It is brilliantly put together by someone. We thank him. We'll link right to his site. It's called The World Mourns with America. And take a look at some of the dozens of pictures from around the world of people literally weeping and crying and leaving flowers and lighting candles in a symbolic embrace and sharing of grief with Americans who have been so horribly hit by this geopolitical catastrophe. David, I think the last week in London, the stock sell-off has certainly gained the attention of some people who are investigating that. There were day after day of major, strange, and unusual activities over there. Just one of the many signs that somebody somewhere, in fact, a lot of somebodies, knew something was about to happen.
Yeah, and the same has happened in Germany. There's been an investigation in Germany into strange movements of stocks and finance immediately before this event. And, you know, as I've talked about in my books, some of the most horrendous events that happen in the world make some people a fortune. And the reason it does that is because they know what's going to happen beforehand and therefore can sell off or whatever just before.
Perfectly, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, the financial thing and something you've just mentioned in terms of, you know, the public reaction, those two things go together also because we now have a situation in which, for instance, just on a very basic level in America, America can go into a deep recession, which is part of the Illuminati agenda, and the president will get no responsibility for this at all because it will be pointed to this event. This is what's caused it.
Sure.
In terms of the mind control, you know, as we've talked about many, many times on this program, the key to problem reaction solution, in fact, the key to evolving this centralized global fascist state is through mind control, more than mind control, emotional manipulation. And if you study the methods of mind control, you'll find that trauma is used fundamentally to do it because a traumatized mind is a suggestible mind. When you're in a traumatized state, you become very, very much more open to suggestion and programming. And this is done on an individual basis, which is where you get a lot of the mind control fanatics and the suicide bombers. It's where you get people who do assassinations and what have you, and the trail back to who's actually behind it, therefore, is lost and obscured. But there's also a collective version of this. And because of the way this event has been so graphically broadcast around the world, and I have to say, you know, I mean, you've been a journalist, I've been a journalist in television, Jeff. To watch newsrooms when in action, when one of these major horrific stories is breaking and in the aftermath of it, it is actually quite a sickening sight. The pictures, it's almost an orgasmic experience in these newsrooms. All kind of rationality goes. And I have to say, the voyeuristic, horrific voyeuristic way that those planes going into those buildings have been shown us from this angle and that angle. The BBC, all these days later, on the national news in Britain last night, was saying, oh, we've got these new pictures, right? And it was just another angle of the planes going into the World Trade Center. And that grotesque, needless repetition has traumatized and traumatized and traumatized more and more people. And in that state, in that collective traumatized mm-hmm. state, mm-hmm. Of course, the suggestibility of this is what we must now do, the human collective mind becomes far more open to it. And it's all part of it.
Exactly. You couldn't have said it any better. I was appalled the years I spent in that business watching these people. I hate to use the term gloating.
Absolutely.
But they would
right
come
there.
Back. Well, all right, there you go. Well, they would come back with footage of a triple fatal automobile wreck or a shooting. They were on a high. And that's one of the reasons I walked away from television news after 12 years. It was no longer journalism. It was shameless self-promotion, self-aggrandizement, and gore. Now, all they did, David, was, as you know, change the name and number of the victims, but the crap stayed the same. And
yep.
They love plane crashes. They love big catastrophes. And if you ask them, they'll deny it. But I've been there, you've been there, and many of the people listening have been there, too. And unfortunately, folks, David and I speak the truth on this. That's the way it works.
And the effect on the collective human mind, like I said, has been absolutely crucial to opening the way for people to accept the solution.
And they, David, the big they, don't have to program or train these alleged journalists and media outlets to do this. They're going to do it on their own. They've got everything going for them going in. It's an automatic.
Yep, it's I couldn't agree more. I must say the thought of actually putting out pictures of people jumping from buildings while people, relatives, close loved ones of people within those buildings were watching this live on television, and the way that these things are repeated. I mean, on the BBC last night, they were showing, quote, new pictures of people jumping from the buildings.
Still doing it, huh?
Yeah, we're doing it. And you know, they've just lost complete touch with reality.
Well, it's, you know, it may be called journalism by some, but there are lines, folks, and I stay away from television as much as I can. There is a place for it. It is an immediate medium, and it can do a job. But I think you've seen, as David said, an orgy of feeding, a feeding frenzy, if you will, on death and horror, the likes of which Americans have not seen before. We will be back in just a couple of minutes with David Icke, live from England. Back to Jeff Renz with David Icke, and of course, for those of you out there who say, well, what about the good journalists? We aren't talking about the journalists out there, many of you listening among them, who operate with a sense of real human decency, compassion, and ethics, and those of you who resist the pressure and the temptation to sensationalize, exploit, and revel in death, suffering, and tragedy. You know who you folks are. There are some good people working in the business. We don't mean to discount all of it. But sadly, and I've seen it, David's seen it, many of you listening who work in television have seen people come into the business who almost turn into something different after a few weeks or a few months, rather like the men and women we send off to Washington, D.C. David, after a few months, we can't recognize most of them anymore. It's something happens when that power becomes a reality, and it is a power trip. That's what it's about. Now, if I might get back to the geopolitics here, regarding bin Laden, whom you rightly mentioned was suspect number one almost from the instant the story began to break. And that repetition is what drove that point home. Now, here's a story from the BBC, and I want you to take it away after this, David, because bin Laden is inextricably linked to what country? Afghanistan. What is around Afghanistan? Iran on the left, the former Soviet Union to the north, Pakistan to the east. Now, get this one. Follow the dots, folks, and then draw the lines connecting them. There is a report now from a former top Pakistani diplomat who has told the BBC News that the U.S. was already planning military action against Osama bin Laden and the Taliban even before last week's attack. Nawaz Naik, former Pakistani foreign secretary, was told by senior American officials in mid-July of this year that military action against Afghanistan would go ahead by the middle of October. Mr. Naik said U.S. officials told him of the plan at a U.N.-sponsored international contact group on Afghanistan, which took place in Berlin. Mr. Naik told the BBC that at the meeting, the U.S. representatives told him that unless bin Laden was handed over swiftly, America would take military action to kill or capture both bin Laden and the Taliban leader, Mullah Omar. The wider objective, according to Mr. Naik, would be to topple the Taliban regime entirely and install a so-called transitional government of moderate Afghans in its place, possibly under the leadership of former Afghan King Zahir Shah. And finally, Mr. Naik was told that Washington would launch its operation from bases in Tajikistan, where American advisors were already in place. He was told that Uzbekistan would also participate in the operation and that 17,000 Russian troops were already on standby. He was lastly told that if the military action went ahead, it would take place before the snows began falling in Afghanistan by the middle of October at the latest.
Stunning. But not surprising if you've studied this this whole scenario over many years. The point being that you decide on what you're going to do in terms of your agenda, and then you sit down and you say, well, how do we justify this? What's the cover story what we can throw out at the public to justify what we want to do? And if you look at what you've just read, and you look at the run-up to the 1991 Gulf War, the whole story unfolds the same. The way that was set up so that there could be an invasion of Iraq. And of course, Iraq, the focus of that was supposed to be Saddam Hussein, except when the terrible impact upon the general Iraqi people of that war had started and unfolded, and the road to Baghdad was open, George Bush, Father George, stopped any further movement towards Baghdad, therefore leaving one of his associates, Saddam Hussein, who was put into place by the CIA, still in power. And as a result of the sanctions that followed that war and the war itself, well in excess of 500,000 children in Iraq who don't want terrorism against anyone have died. And I think that what we need to do is take a deep breath and take a wider view of what's going on here, because understandably, in the wake of New York and Washington, the emotions have stopped us thinking straight. Now, I understand that, but if we're going to stop this literally evil scenario unfolding, then we've just got to actually calm down a bit and look at this a bit more rationally. All over the world, the hierarchies in the various countries answer to the same force. In the public mind, because of the way that the world is reported, the leadership of one country appears to be different and not connected to the leadership of another country. Indeed, often they're projected as if the two leaderships are very antagonistic towards each other. In fact, they answer to the same coordinating force. And what they do is that they manipulate their general population in line with the agenda, just as the hierarchy in another country manipulates its population. And what's happening, and what's happened throughout history and is now happening on a global scale, is that the masses, the general populations of these different countries, are being played off against each other by hierarchies who overwhelmingly answer to the same force. So now we're seeing the people of America, the general population of America, and what we call the West, played off against the population of the Islamic world. And the Islamic world, overwhelmingly, in terms of its leadership in Saudi Arabia and elsewhere, answer to the same force that the leadership of America and the West answer to. So this is happening all the time. And what we've got to stop doing is fighting among ourselves, as we're now being asked to do on a global level here, and start focusing on the common force that is manipulating all of us. The force that through people like Bush and Cheney and Powell is manipulating the American population now is working through Islamic leadership to manipulate that population and play us off against each other. Because if there's a few of you, and compared with the general population of the world, the people who are knowingly involved in this manipulation and centralization of power are a fraction of the world population, you can only achieve your end if you divide and rule the mass of the people. And that's what this is, what is happening now. And one of the things that, you know, people in America might not like this at this moment, and I understand that, but it's time for some straight talking, because our children have to live in the world that's unfolding by the minute here. America, and I'm not, again, let me make the distinction between the mass of the American people, who I, like I said earlier, have tremendous affection for, and respect for, decent people, and the difference between them and this force within their government that is orchestrating this stuff. And at that level of that cancer within the government, America, represented by that force, does not stand against terrorism. The very people who are appearing in front of cameras by the minute now, the Bushes, the Cheneys, the Powells, the Richard Armitages, by the way, the Deputy Secretary of State, who was one of the major people involved in the CIA drug running operation in Southeast Asia at the time of Vietnam and afterwards. These are the people who are standing up, who have been involved in state-sponsored terrorism from the U.S. State Department and government in places like Grenada, in places like Panama, where thousands of innocent people were slaughtered in that so-called surgical strike by George Bush. They have been involved, as they are at this time now in Iraq, in some of the most horrendous state-sponsored terrorism this planet has ever seen. And let me just give you a quote here from the 60 Minutes television program from 1996 during the Clinton administration. The reporter asked Madeleine Albright, the Secretary of State, the following, talking about the results of the sanctions against Iraq. We have heard that 500,000 children have died because of the sanctions. I mean, that's more children than died in Hiroshima. And you know, is the price worth it?
10 times.
And Madeleine Albright's reply was, I think this is a very hard choice, but the price, we think the price is worth it. 500,000 dead innocent children from people caused by the policies of people who are now asking us to go to war on their behalf to fight terrorism and state-sponsored terrorism. It's time to wake up. We're being played like a violin, and it's time for the orchestra to stop playing, and only we can stop that.
And that was in 1996. We are here now in 2001. The casualty toll in Iraq is now said to be conservatively around 1 million and counting. We just don't know.
Target is still in power. And he's meant to be in power, because then they can keep justifying the policies against the innocent people of Iraq.
Now, there are financial threads to this, economic threads, big oil threads, oil and gas threads, which I'll put on the table for our discussion right after the news break, which is coming up right now. My guest tonight, my friend and colleague and one of the most original thinkers on the planet in terms of understanding world geopolitical maneuvers, powers, pressures, and the personalities, and oh, are they back? It seems like they never go away. The Cheneys, the Bushes, the Armitages, they're all there. Again, it's a replay. And we'll be right back in just a few minutes. So as we break, do think of terrorism, mourn our losses here, but try to pull back and look at the entire world and try to understand how the American population has lost control or given up or both the control of its foreign policy and its government. And our foreign policy has more often than not been used as a ruthless tool of murder, oppression, bribery, extortion, and worse in countries around the world who haven't a chance or a say-so in what really happens to them. And some of that horrible karma has come back to these United States. We shall continue after this. Jeff Renz with David Icke, and David's new book, Children of the Matrix, and it's an amazing book, how one book can have so much data in it. David's earlier books are classics, continue to sell extremely well. For those of you who are figuring out that the men and women in Washington and our elected government doesn't really have a whole lot to do with running this country on a large global scale, even a microcosmic scale, are very happy always to find David's books and to read them. The phone number to get David's book, his newest and others, Children of the Matrix, 888-609-5006, 888-609-5006. If you are outside of the United States and want to call in, write this down, 361-741-2263, 361-741-2263 to order David Icke's books outside the U.S., and we'll give those numbers again as we continue. There is a story here, David, which I got from Jim Mars, who was on the program last night, another outstanding journalist. And he's always said, as you have always said and others, that you've got to be able to follow the money. Well, Jim sent me a note today and a very interesting story, which was printed first in 1997, I believe. But let me get to the meat of this, and I'd like you to comment on it. We all know, by the way, going back to the Gulf War, that Saddam Hussein was told by April Glaspie, our ambassador to Iraq, to go right ahead and take that piece of Kuwait back that was under discussion because it traditionally was Iraqi territory. The Kuwaitis had been slant drilling and taking Iraqi oil for years. She said it was none of our affair when Iraq asked her in the presence of its leader, Saddam Hussein, what would you do if we invaded Kuwait? She said, "Not none of our business." Got a note from Jim Morris today. He says, "Hi, Jeff. They say follow the money. Well, here's the money trail. Everybody from Hitler on down has wanted the Caspian Sea oil. And with the fall of communism, the international bankers finally got some control over this resource. The problem is that to get this oil to the West requires a pipeline that would go through Tajikistan, Afghanistan, and Pakistan." You got the middle one there, I think. "But the fundamentalist Muslim governments of these places won't play ball too easily. So they get an agent like Ho Chi Minh, for example, in this case Osama bin Laden, who was funded and encouraged by our CIA to fight the Russians in Afghanistan, to be the bugaboo, either by instigation or merely by allowing his attacks. Then in the ensuing unthinking surge of patriotism, either U.S. troops or a so-called U.N. coalition moves into the area to wipe out the terrorists and install a, quote, democratically aligned government. And bingo, the obstacles to the Central Asia pipeline disappear, and the profit line is increased at only the cost of several thousand human lives. Unfortunate, but necessary in this age of overpopulation. It's a grander replay of the Gulf War, but it's still all about oil, money, and the rest, a commodity, of course, dear to the hearts of the Bush family and others." Here's one key short paragraph from the story called "Consortium Formed to Build Central Asia Gas Pipeline," dateline October 27, 1997, written from Turkmenistan. Here's the quote. "The 48-inch diameter pipeline will extend 790 miles from the Afghanistan-Turkmenistan border, generally follow the Herat to Kandahar road through Afghanistan, cross the Pakistan border in the vicinity of Quetta, and terminate in Multan, Pakistan, where it will tie into an existing pipeline." You see, folks, where the oil and gas is going to flow, don't you? Right through Afghanistan. Think of Afghanistan and the Taliban, and you understand why the story I quoted from last hour off the BBC may have a lot of substance to it, that military action was already in the planning stage to go in and remove the Taliban and clean house in Afghanistan so that pipeline could go right through. David?
Well, that fits in, of course, perfectly with what you mentioned earlier about the diplomat pointing out that an attack on Afghanistan was known about months ago. Also, interestingly, just as a quick aside, we now learn that Tony Blair, when he went on holiday during August, took with him all the files on bin Laden. Amazing coincidence, given what has happened just literally a few weeks later. Why would you do that? The coincidence level here is just, as someone said during a court case, in fact, involving money relating to the Gulf War and funding Saddam Hussein out of Britain, the judge said before he was later removed from the case that there was smoke pouring from every window, there's flames coming through the roof, I therefore have to assume the house is on fire. And not much more than a week, 2 weeks, and certainly a month from now, the evidence put together that's going to come to light will show that the house is absolutely ablaze in terms of both the motivation and the pre-knowledge and pre-organization responsibility of people and forces within the United States in relation to what happened in New York and Washington. And all over the world, if you look back through history, coups have been created, justifications to go in and remove governments of various kinds have been created to advance economic means and economic agendas, particularly in the Middle East. The so-called arc of crisis, keeping the Middle East in disarray and division, has always had an economic part to play in this, in terms of that once the oil started flowing and coming on stream out of the Middle East, that's when this arc of crisis there was created to keep those countries divided and ruled, because within chaos and disharmony, you can manipulate more easily than calmness and harmony. Mm-hmm. But although economics, and there's no doubt at all that this pipeline is one level of what has happened here and what is planned to happen in terms of Afghanistan. Incidentally, Afghanistan has been suffering from an horrendous drought for a considerable time, and some 5 million people at least there are on the brink of starvation. So,
and 3 million at least have left as refugees to get away from the deteriorating economic condition. By the way, American taxpayers gave the Afghanistan government $150 million last year for general humanitarian relief and another $48 million, I am told, to help them eradicate the poppy fields and the production of heroin. I'm sure every dollar went to that goal, didn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. But having you emphasized quite rightly the economic level of this, that is one level of it. But if you want to get to the higher, more encompassing level of what's going on, this is about global control in terms of an agenda that goes back thousands of years.
Well, David, you said
it also goes into the realms that these people are not human as we perceive human.
Exactly. I'll agree with that. Whether or not they come from off-planet or otherwise, they aren't human in my book, and I think a lot of people are here hearing that right now. The whole issue of states that won't go along, call them rogue states, whatever you want, the establishment likes to call them that. The idea, as you said years ago, David, and you said it so eloquently, is to eradicate nationalism. I don't care if it's a country run by a dictator or otherwise. Many dictators have amazing support at home. The idea is to break these states down who are impediments to a one-world order.
Yeah, the point being that, again, as I mentioned earlier, in terms of those who are knowingly involved in this whole grotesque agenda, they are a fraction of the world population. Therefore, for them to reach a point where they can literally become dictators to the world, dictators to the planet, the points of decision-making in economics, in the military, in politics, in all these key areas have to be centralized. And so what we've seen, and again, this goes back thousands and thousands of years, we have seen a movement that has constantly centralized power. We've gone from, if you like, a tribal situation to nation states where the nation state is centrally controlled. We're now moving rapidly into that next stage, certainly we're there in Europe, in which a super state level of amalgamated nations are then involved in centralization of decision making to all those nations from a single point. This is what the NAFTA and the expansion of NAFTA to the whole of North America, which was agreed at the summit of the Americas recently to happen by 2005, is all about. It's creating the Americas as a super state with centralized decision making and dictatorship. We've just had the Organization of African Unity, the coordinating body, if you like, of states in Africa, change its name to the African Union. So what we're looking at now is the rapid expansion of this next stage, which is decision-making at a central point to an amalgamation of many, many nations. The next stage, and which is the one they're going towards, is world government decision-making. And at that point, a few people around the table can literally dictate to the world. And that is what this whole the whole foundation of what has happened in New York and Washington is actually about, to massively advance that. And
right.
My goodness me, it is doing so.
It is indeed, and we'll be right back in just a couple of minutes. Stay there. Okay, we're right back. The whole idea of declaring war on terrorism is... Well, it's an easy sell. Who's not against terrorism? But the big picture, again, if you look at it honestly, casts tragically our wonderful United States of America in the eyes of many people around the world in just that role of world terrorist thug, ostensibly policeman, but again, tool of big business and international cartels which seek to subjugate and subvert all and everything before it. It's not a pretty picture. Americans, I think, David, were even more shocked, more profoundly damaged by this attack, because they really don't understand that much of the world hates the United States government, not the people.
Well, I think, Jeff, one of the problems with this whole situation, like I mentioned right at the start of the evening, is the way that the American people, the population, and the people that control the government are actually associated as one of the same. So on one level, when you challenge this force within the government, and it's the same force that's within the British government controlling Tony Blair and what have you as well. But when you do it in terms of America, so many Americans take offense because they take it as an insult against them. And it's not. It's to expose the way the population is being exploited by this force. And in the same way, as I've traveled around the world, mm-hmm. So many people blame Americans. It's America, big bad America. And they don't dissociate and see the difference between the population and the force that, on a global stage, represents that population. And I came across this quote this week from Amnesty International, which was in 1996, and it said, "Throughout the world, on any given day, a man, woman, or child is likely to be displaced, tortured, killed, or disappeared at the hands of governments or armed political groups. More often than not, the United States shares the blame." And, you know, in the end, life is about taking responsibility, and if you don't take responsibility, then the consequences come back. And it's time for not just the American population, but the British population and the populations of all countries to start taking responsibility for what happens in their name. And if people do a modicum, minimum amount of research, they will start seeing the enormous, staggering level of state-sponsored terrorism, coups, manipulations, political assassinations that are orchestrated by this force within the American government. And, of course, in Britain, too. Britain's been doing it for longer, in fact. I mean, you know, we're the global manipulators of the world in Britain, but we're more subtle here. The force that represents us in Britain is more subtle. It keeps its head down more, and it actually lets America take the rap, because as I've explained in my books many times, the real force that controls America is not in America. The people like the Bushes and the Powells and the Cheneys, in the end, are actually puppets of a force that does not actually base itself in America. But by making America the fall guy, by putting it on the world stage as the bad guy, it's like in a company, someone in the background makes a decision, but then tells an underling to go and tell the workforce what's going to happen and take all the flack for it, while the person who's made the decision actually keeps his head down and keeps away from the aggravation. Hmm. And that's how America is used. This is why it's been built up as the superpower when the forces that control it are actually in Europe. But, you know, this point about populations taking responsibility for what's done in their name is so, so important, because in the end, as we've seen in the horrendous events of a week ago, it's that population that takes the consequences of what's done in its name, even though it would be horrified. The population of America, if they could see with their own eyes what is happening in countries as a result of foreign policy and intelligence manipulation by this force that controls America, would be utterly, utterly horrified. But the fact that they don't know, and to be fair, to a large extent, have not bothered to look and question, means that they are getting the consequences for what's done in their name, even though they'd be horrified by it if they knew.
Ah, really well said. The American people are again running in fear, and I want to underscore that. There is a great paranoia. People are afraid. They're buying supplies. They're buying guns and ammunition and so forth. And that, again, is the intent of running this issue as it has been run. Again, whether premeditated or, as someone said, just something that fell into the laps of the people who would be world kings. It has been a long time that America has been invaded, more damage done in this attack than since the American Civil War, the first time, I guess, since the War of 1812, when a foreign enemy actually nailed this country as it did, if you can exclude World War II, when the Japanese sent their Fugo balloons over here and did kill a handful of people. But it has been a shock. We have much history to look at, and if we can only study history, and tragically the history of this country, as it has manipulated its people into World War II, for example, as it has lied to its people about Vietnam, about the John Kennedy assassination, about Waco, about Ruby Ridge, and most recently, the hideous lies about the shootdown of TWA 800. Lots to look at, lots to think about. You know, David, one of the most graphic examples of manipulation of the public mind in this country that I've seen in a long time occurred between last Tuesday and the Oklahoma City bombing. After the OKC blast, in which the Murrah building was brought down by multiple internal charges in addition to McOswald's truck bomb on the outside, which failed to leave much of a crater at all and allegedly knocked an entire building down, or most of it, and, by the way, which involved a federal crime scene being chopped up, hauled away, and buried before anybody could go in and do a reasonable investigation of, another unprecedented aspect of that travesty. Shortly after that, I'd say within a week to two, the term patriot and patriotism in this country, David, became synonymous with today what we would, call a terrorist. It became the dirtiest word in the English language. Patriotism, patriot groups, militia groups, and all of the rest of it, America First groups. And now today, we have a literal reversal of that. Now, if you're not a patriot, you're some kind of scumbag. It's an amazing turnaround when you think about it.
It's literally playing with people's minds, and it's showing how easy it is. And, you know, problem, reaction, solution scenarios only work if the key middle phase of that technique is accepted by the public, which is reaction. And if we would just, when these things happen, instead of just listening to what the official version is and just ask the word, who benefits? Who benefits from me believing what I'm being asked to believe about this? Then we would start to focus on the people who are far more likely to be behind it. Someone once said, he who benefits from a crime is the one most likely to have committed it. And the only people that have benefited from this horror are those that wish to advance massively and rapidly the Big Brother society. And they're the very people who are condemning atrocity and suggesting what needs to be done, the solution as a result of it. We can break down this age-old technique that's been so effective over thousands of years if only we would break it at the point where we become involved, which is the reaction part of it, and that means who benefits. And if people realize, these people realize that any time these things happen, the population are going to be focusing on them and saying, hey, you benefit from this. Uh-huh. What's going on?
Yeah.
You know, why should we believe what you tell me? When you're the people benefiting from it, then these scenarios would stop being played out because there would be no benefit anymore in them. In fact, it would be counter-benefit because you'd realize that when you did it, the population would turn immediately and look at you, the people who are benefiting from it. So that's a fundamental thing that we can do. But in terms of patriotism, what I feel is going to happen is that there's going to be more and more events and more reasons for the American psyche to be broken in terms of its spirit of standing alone. We may be seeing lots of patriotism at this time, and that's understandable, an understandable reaction to an attack apparently on America from outside, according to the official story. But one of the greatest obstacles to this global society has been this American vision of itself, you know, in its own country, standing alone, doing its own thing, not giving, wanting to give away power to decision making that affects it from outside in terms of political decision making, right. military decision making, financial decision making. If they can create a situation, and you used the key word just before the break, fear, in which people become panicked by fear, then and think we can't stand alone. Oh my goodness, they are going to then start to accept that more and more decisions affecting the American nation will be taken outside of the borders of America. And I think this attack on the American spirit is going to be part of what's coming along. And it's very important that American spirit that makes America what it is does not bow to the pressure and the trauma and the shocks designed to get it to give its power away to global agencies of finance, politics, and the military. Because what we're seeing now in terms of Afghanistan and the way this whole scenario is being wound up is a precise example of how the World Army, which they want to create from an amalgamation of the UN peacekeeping operation and particularly NATO, will work. I remember a journalist saying to me once, you know, I was talking about this, Jeff, she said to me, well, what's the point of a world army? There'd be no one to fight, you know. And of course, what will happen is once you have a world army which is designed to carry out the policies of the world government, then any country that the media can be used to demonize, mm-hmm. to justify intervention, mm-hmm. will then be subject to an intervention by the World Army in exactly the way that Afghanistan is facing now and other countries have in the past, like Iraq and other places. What it means is that any country that tries to stand alone, that tries to be independent of the global structure, will be subject to intervention by the World Army to bring it into line. This is the way the whole structure is designed. And what we're looking at here is a de facto unnamed World Army being prepared to go in and play its role as the global police force. And of course, if you then go into a bigger conflict with China, eventually, something on a global scale like that, the solution to stop this and to stop this ever happening again will be the introduction of centralized global institutions, including a world army, to stop this global conflict ever happening again. It will be just another version, another step on from the problem-reaction solution of the Second World War and the First World War, which led to centralization of power as a result of stopping another conflict like that.
Indeed. All right, let's take our break and come right back with David Icke. By the way, this assault on American integrity, American identity, American patriotism, American nationalism has been going on for quite some time. The watering down, the weakening of the identity of this country has intentionally been a project, a deployed project for a long time. We'll talk more about that as we continue with David Icke in just a couple minutes. And the issue of watering down, diluting, David, and ultimately subverting American identity, which is the key, of course, to destruction of nationality and nationalism on the world. One of the key techniques being used in this country and something that has caused great problems and I don't think has even come home to roost yet by a mile is the incredible influx of illegal aliens. And I don't care if they're Mexicans, Asians, or pink people. It doesn't matter. The country has now been burdened with between 8 and 10 million illegal aliens, which everywhere you look now, they are taking. Oh, yes, they're working. They're doing those jobs that allegedly Americans don't want. But they are taking from the state funds for education, for medical, for housing, for food, you name it. It is costing this country tremendously economically. But more than that, these people don't come to America, David, like immigrants 50, 100 years did. With a wish to become necessarily American citizens, celebrate and rejoice in the history of this country, and recognize it as a unique success story on the planet. This is a different kind of assault on American culture and American identity. Just one of many.
Well, you would know more about that, obviously, Jeff, than me. But one of the principles, and again, this is the manipulation of people, not the condemnation of people. One of the principles is to not just with moving peoples around the world to break down the status quo. It's also moving troops around the world so that you put as many foreign troops as possible in a country because they're more likely to do things to the population than troops that actually come from that country. This is why there's so many foreign troops in America while so many American troops are in other countries.
More of them headed overseas as we speak.
Yeah, I mean, this is all to do with the breakdown and you know, I'm all for people coming together, and because we're just in physical bodies of different kinds. I mean, this idea of racism is utterly ludicrous and childlike when you look at the fact that we're all consciousness in a physical form. It just has to be different physical forms. But the way that this situation is being, this culture situation, if you like, is being manipulated, is designed to advance this agenda of breaking down national identity. There's
nothing
no doubt
to
about
do,
that.
Nothing to do with racism. It is a war on culture.
It's about breaking down national identity because only by doing that will the resistance to the global centralized state be diluted. And of course, like I said a few minutes ago, America has a national identity probably greater than any other, certainly in the Western world. And that's a key state of mind that needs to be broken down. And just going back to what you were talking about patriotism being demonized and now patriotism or non-patriotism, if you like, being demonized, the difference between the two is that, the patriotism that was demonized as a result of Oklahoma, et cetera, was a patriotism that was exposing the government. And this is a patriotism now being so encouraged that is behind and supporting the government. And that's the difference between the two. And that's why one to the people that are in power is a thing to be exposed and demonized, and the other one is to be encouraged. It's how that patriotism relates to those in power. I think one of the things that might be worth just talking about briefly is that the way that I've come to understand in the last literally few weeks, in a more simple and detailed way, the force that's actually behind all this. I've been talking, on this program and writing the books for years about the fact that we are controlled by a non-human force that appears human because it works through apparently human bodies. We talked about extraterrestrials and all that stuff, but I now more and more understand that the force that is occupying and controlling the thought and reaction processes of world leaders across the planet is actually a force that possesses those bodies from not even another dimension. I've been told that the force that is actually possessing these bodies, and they're possessed during the rituals that go on in the secret society network where the Illuminati operates and in the satanic network and all that stuff. And this takes over people. So it was interesting you mentioned earlier on in this conversation how people go to Washington or go into positions of power and suddenly, hey, that's not the guy I used to know.
Not at all.
And the way that it works is this. A long, long time ago, there was an interbreeding between a non-human force and humans creating a hybrid bloodline, which has many, many offshoots. Now, this has been described to me in more recent times as a corrupted DNA. And this corruption of the DNA, as it's described to me, lies dormant in people until it is activated. And it's vibrationally activated through ritual. And this is one of the key reasons why these guys are doing the same rituals that they were doing back in ancient Babylon. Why are they doing this in the modern world? Because of the vibrational effect it has. And these secret society rituals that people at the start, as they're brought into the web, take part in unknowingly in terms of what it's really about. activate this so-called corruption of the DNA in these particular bloodlines. This is why when you look at the genealogy of world leaders across the planet in all these different cultures, they keep coming back to the same basic bloodline because they have this corruption in it. Now, once this is activated, it opens these people up to possession. It opens the vibrational door for entities to take them over. And they appear to us in this three-dimensional world to be the same body, but the actual force that is now controlling that body is different. And I talk in my books about the fact that these entities exist on something I call the lower fourth dimension, very, very close to this one, but not quite in this one, just outside the frequency range of our physical senses. I now, in more detail, can understand that actually they are in a what you might call a crevice frequency between this physical dimension and the next non-physical dimension. And funnily enough, I was reading only today a book by a physicist who is talking about something she calls interspaces between parallel universes and how these interspaces are created. Interestingly also, in these documents that have become known as the Emerald Tablets that are supposed to go back thousands of years, doesn't matter if they do, doesn't matter really what their origin is, what they talk about in there, I can now see more and more is absolutely right. It talks about entities, it talks about serpent-type entities, reptilian-type entities that exist in, quote, planes unknown to man. Mm-hmm. And there is this this interspace between dimensions where these entities operate. Now, these particular bloodlines with this corrupted DNA are open doors for these entities to possess once this corruption of the DNA is activated. So someone like the Queen of England or the Queen Mother or George Bush is not as a child possessed by these entities at the point of being born. It's when this activation happens that this other force comes in and takes them over. Now, this means that if you can put these particular bloodlines in positions of power as presidents, business leaders, media owners around the world, you are putting in to power this force that has become known in folklore throughout history as demons and what have you under various names into power, because they then take over those particular bodies because of this DNA corruption. And this is what is happening. This is the coordinating force, Jeff, that is coordinating an agenda that the so-called Illuminati actually play out in this three-dimensional world. These are possessed people. They are not human. And one of the things that goes with this corrupted DNA once activated is a complete suppression of emotional response. And this is why these people can plan and carry out horrors like New York and Washington and Iraq and the Second and First World Wars, etc., and have no emotional consequence for themselves of the consequences for others of their actions because of this suppression of the emotional level. They are cold-blooded emotional people, if you like. Uh-huh. And these are the people in the positions of power around the world. And this is why people change dramatically once they start getting into power.
A short word for that is sociopathology, I guess. They just don't have the morals and the benchmarks and the ethics that most of the rest of us do. They have almost none. In fact, they have none, I guess.
And this is one of the key things that people, I think, need to appreciate. And one of the ways that we miss the point is that we view events and we view happenings in terms of how we would respond, how we would feel. Now, people listening to this program, 99% of the people in America would not be able to understand how someone could plan and carry out what happened last week because they're looking at how they would be in those situations.
Right.
These people are not the same. Therefore, we can't judge events and what is happening and what is being done on the basis of how we would feel, because these people don't feel like we do.
They certainly don't. David, I really appreciate your time. Thanks for getting up so early. We'll be back in touch in a couple of weeks and catch up with you then. And David's book again, Children of the Matrix, 1-888-609-5006. Take a break and come right back. Going to Israel Live with Barry Chamish next.